Welcome to today's episode of Sex and the Bull City. This is a podcast for Bull City Psychotherapy in Durham, North Carolina. We are opening a new practice in Charlotte, Queen City Healthy Sex. And so you might hear some of this podcast there as well. There's kind of been some debate about whether or not we'll be sharing some airtime. But today, I am with Murray Crockett, and we're going to introduce ourselves so you get to know us just a little bit, and then we are going to be talking in the first of our series about kink. So I am Celinda Malone. I'm a clinician here at Bull City Psychotherapy. I specialize in all things sex, gender, and religious trauma. And I wanted to do a podcast about kink because I have been a part of the kink community for 15 years now, to varying degrees, in various places. And I think this is an important place to be having conversations around sex and gender. Murray, what brings you to a podcast about kink?
Well, I wanted to introduce myself first. Mm-hmm. So my name is Murray Crockett. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist associate. And I started working with kinky couples when I first started out. Mm-hmm. And it really sparked my interest. I really enjoy working with that population just because of the openness and the structure around it. And so that originally sparked my interest, and I have done my own like exploring in the kinky world, and I'm still pretty new to it, to see if I even have any kinks. So a lot of what I'll be kind of talking about and referencing today is also coming from the space of exploring and being curious and wondering some of the same questions that a lot of people are wondering when they're starting out. So yeah, that's where I am with the kink.
Okay. I am looking forward to a good conversation.
Me too.
So let's start by just talking about what kink is. Mm-hmm. So what have you encountered? What, when you first had couples come to you and describe that they were kinky, what were their definitions and how did you receive that?
So honestly, my first few couples were deep into the 24/7 lifestyle.
Okay.
So it was a huge eye-opening experience. Mm-hmm. And their kinks were a lot of different kinks as far as like the BDSM, bondage and the dom and submissive roles.
Mm-hmm. So power play.
Power play, thank you. So it was a lot of 24/7 things, and then the kinks kind of fell up under that. So some age play, some bondage, some more kinks. I don't also want to put it all out there, but
right.
I'll start with just like age play and the daddy little
dynamic.
Okay.
Okay. And so that was enough to get you thinking about what is kink, and how did you go about starting to answer that question for yourself?
Well, I started doing my research, because I was trying to figure out what the structure is first. Mm-hmm. Since I do work with relationships, I need to know what kinks are, but more importantly, I need to know what the relationship dynamic is supposed to look like, what's going to be safe, and like being able to address those things first. Mm-hmm. Because kinks are kinks, right? People have them and they vary.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't necessarily need to know the specific kinks completely.
Mm-hmm. The nature of them is less important than the structure of the relationship.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So where did you start looking for more information as you wanted to be educated as their clinician?
Mm-hmm. So I started with The Leather Couch,
Okay.
which is a book that I actually have with me today that I wanted to put out there for other people, other therapists to reference. This is not necessarily a book for the general population to read, but it's called The Leather Couch by Stephanie, and she is a sex therapist and has been a sex therapist for over 15 years, and she's also in the BDSM community. And so I started here. She has a few books in her series where she's just educating people, well, educating therapists. She also has another book that is for the general population called With Sprinkles on Top.
Okay.
Have you heard of that?
I have not heard of that.
So it's a book, I haven't read it yet, but the book is supposed to be for a kinky person and a vanilla person dynamic.
Okay.
And it's supposed to help the vanilla person understand kink and how to have that relationship with their partner. So I haven't read it yet, but I'm getting to that, and I think it'll be interesting because I haven't had a kinky person and vanilla person get together as of yet, but I know it's coming.
So I'm imagining that the title comes from the fact that even if you're vanilla, in other words, you are not, you have not identified any kinks for yourself. You might have just a little bit of extra something because your partner is bringing that to the relationship. And so that little bit extra on top is the sprinkles. Does that sound like your impression? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just talk a little bit about kink and what it is. I want to distinguish between a couple of different things.
Okay.
So, and you brought this up, that there were some specific kinks that were like bedroom only kinds of things. They were about the sex. They were about the interaction during any kind of spicy time. Right. And so things like the daddy dom, age play, BDSM, that generally falls under that category. And that's a little bit different than the relationship dynamics that to varying degrees can be as much as 24/7 and can be as much as how they choose to interact with one another. And it might have little or nothing to do with the actual turn-ons and orgasms. And I think that's a really important distinction to make, because not everybody who is inside the BDSM community identifies as somebody who needs a power dynamic. Needs to have one person be in charge, one person be submissive. Some people are just attracted to a specific object, and that one object, I'll use latex as an example, that that's a fairly common kink. And while that might be involved in power play, generally the part of it that is important is the sex, the orgasms, and that object by itself is kinky. And so I use the word, and I don't know how widely this is common. I use the word fetish for those things that are just about the orgasm, just about the sex. And I use kink in a more umbrella kind of way. And I think that can include the 24/7 dynamic. That can include letting the bedroom bleed into the day-to-day, but it doesn't take over everything. And everybody has their own thing to negotiate. So I'm wondering, of the kinky couples that you have worked with, how many of them, or what percentage of them, do you think worked with power play versus just singular fetish?
I would say about 50-50.
Okay.
Just because some power play issues became a reason they were coming in. Maybe they didn't negotiate it correctly, and that caused some issues. And then some of them were just exploring kinks, and wanted to have a conversation about it. And it was just something that made intimacy better for them, or they were lacking certain kinks that would make intimacy better for them. So about 50-50, not too many that were completely just had a power dynamic.
Okay. Now you said you have started exploring the community a bit as well. I'm curious what you, are you finding the same split in the community? Because my experience of the community has been a lot more power dynamics.
Before I answer that specific question, I want to also acknowledge how, outside of the community, I see more of the power dynamics. So the couples who identify and say we're kinky, 50-50, some of them have power dynamics, and then some of them are, they're fine. They just want to talk about kinks and how to, make their sex life better. But I see more of the power dynamic issues within people who don't identify as kinksters.
They tend to exist for a lot of most couples, I think. And one of the things that I actually like about kink is that you make it explicit. And you negotiate and you are very intentional about the power dynamic that's developing instead of just trying to figure it out and never really acknowledging, pretending everybody's on equal footing. And yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, so back to your original question, which was what again? I'm sorry.
Do you see the same split in the community?
So I haven't explored that much in the community is to be able to have like a really good percentage
Okay.
split.
I'm just curious what you've observed.
I see people exploring most, I guess because I'm in the explorer phase, that I'm also gravitating towards people who are also kind of exploring, and they're just like trying to figure it out. But I do see a lot of power dynamic kinksters, but I wouldn't be able to give you like an accurate percentage or anything like that because I'm still around people who are like, I don't know, maybe not. Potentially, right? So.
Now, you used a phrase just a bit ago that I want to come back to. And you said you see these power dynamic relations show up that they didn't negotiate correctly. Tell me what you mean by that.
Meaning they had assumptions of what would work and they kind of just went with it. Or they didn't talk about it in depth. And so when something goes wrong or something, someone's upset because something happened or they didn't like something, now there's this disconnect between the two of them. Because they'll even get to the point to where they've signed a contract, like they've agreed to these rules, and the rules are not accurate for what they actually need and want. So that's what I mean by it really causing a conflict between them because they haven't really discussed it enough or they haven't really tested it out before they made it official. And like, this is not ironclad rules.
I think, especially when you're first getting started, it sounds really hot to some people that you have this contract and you are giving yourself wholly over to this dynamic. And so people will find one on the internet, download it, and go because it's hot. And then they end up in the situation that you're talking about. Of it doesn't actually fit our lives. It doesn't fit who we are as people. It doesn't fit our needs. I refer to myself in the kinky space as negotiation ninja.
Really?
I love that. It's one of my very favorite things to do with kinky people, to work with the negotiation or renegotiation of a dynamic. And one of the first principles is the rules are there to serve you, not the other way around. And so if they are not flexible and able to adjust to the needs that you actually have, they're not going to last.
Would you mind giving like an example of what some needs would be? That someone would put in a contract, potentially.
Okay. That's a great question. So, if the need is for, or the intention is for the dominant to provide for their submissive self-care. And they make rules about when to brush their teeth and when to make sure they eat their vegetables. And, you know, these are some pretty common kinds of things that come up. And it feels very nurturing to think about, like, here's all the ways I want to take care of you. And I want to see you, you know, healthy and happy. And it can feel very nurturing. But if it doesn't fit their lifestyle, if it doesn't fit their schedule, if it's just not possible, you're setting them up for failure. And so setting your submissive up for failure by giving them rules they can't actually follow is going to harm the relationship. Now, if you get in that situation and say, we're going to try it for a couple of days, and if it doesn't fit you, we will find what does. That's negotiation.
Okay.
The goal might remain the same. The goal might be, I want my submissive to take care of themselves and prioritize themselves, because otherwise, if I don't force them to, they're not going to. And this is a pretty common thing. That goal can remain the same, but the details of how to get there are not ironclad, are not absolute. And to be just a little disclosing of myself, my husband and I have a 24/7 dynamic and have for 12 years. Generally, we will go with a couple of days to a week with some new rule, some new goal. And if it's too much for him to keep up with because he has a disability, if it's being harmful to him in some way, if it's not suiting my needs as the dominant partner, and it's making my life unpleasant in some way, we're going to renegotiate that. We're going to, not that we are changing our goals, but we're changing how we're meeting those goals. And I think that ongoing process can be really intimidating for some people, because they feel like, well, I said the thing, and if I don't stick with it, then this was just for nothing. And then it's not hot, right?
Okay. So I'm hearing you say that there has to be a lot of flexibility.
Yes.
And it has to be flexible because you have to actually see if it meets your needs in the first place.
Yes. Yes. And I think this is where setting the principles and values of the relationship starts. Because you can remain consistent about the values and goals. Like, it's important to me that my husband and I have a way to connect when I first come home. And so we have a rule about dropping everything and starting with a kiss. And that can be hard. We have a child, and
I was just about to say, when does that become unrealistic? Like, where's the flexibility around dropping everything and coming home to a kiss?
Mm-hmm. So the flexibility became after everything gets set down. After the dog has stopped jumping on me. But it is the first priority. Just to acknowledge that we're together. I'm focused on you. I see you. You're an important part of my day. I prioritize you. And it doesn't have to last long. It can be a 10-second kiss. It can be... And then we move right on with everything else. And the sacred part is not the kiss. The sacred part is the attention to one another. And that part remains the same no matter how the rule gets implemented. And so flexibility in the details, solidity on the values and the goals.
Okay. Now this is where I want to back up.
Please.
Because I don't want people to get lost in this. So we are talking about a dominant and submissive 24/7 dynamic.
Correct.
Where the kink is submission. Okay. And then the rule or the ritual of coming home and having a kiss is still up under the submission umbrella. Okay.
That was well summarized.
Thank you. I'm picking up pretty quickly these days.
So, for me, negotiation is this ongoing process. And I think some people are intimidated by the prospect of showing up with their needs.
Well, I think this is where individual therapy or having an idea of who you are and what you need comes into play. And how that affects having a kinky relationship. Because if you are someone who doesn't acknowledge your needs or has been taught to self-sacrifice and not really care about your needs, how does that affect your kinky relationship?
Yep. 100%. I think one of the roles that we can have as clinicians is helping people be the people that they want to be so that when they are in this relationship, they can show up as a healthy human. Kink will expose people's stuff. So if you have people-pleasing, self-sacrifice stuff, if you have hurt from past relationships, it's harder to hide that in a kinky relationship.
Yeah, well, especially if you are taking on a role, like with the people pleasing and the submission, right? How much of it is healthy submission and you having a value of submission opposed to this is the role I've naturally taken on my entire life. I know how to be submissive, so I'm trying to keep doing that when really I don't. It doesn't serve me, right? I don't really necessarily want to be doing it, but I'm playing the submissive role because this is what I've always known.
And it's comfortable for me.
And it's comfortable. Yeah.
That happens. Some people... I started out that way. I started out with... showing up in the space looking for a dominant partner because I was comfortable there. Doesn't really meet my needs emotionally, relationally.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make me feel like the best version of myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be good at it.
With you saying that, I'm wondering, what would you want to say to people who may be interested in like a different kink that they feel... Let me rephrase this. What would you say to people who kind of started out where you started, where mm-hmm. they naturally are falling into this submissive role, or they're naturally falling into even a dominant role
mm-hmm.
that they don't necessarily enjoy or feels like serves them, and they want to explore kink,
mm-hmm.
And they start recognizing that they are more dominant, or they're more submissive, or they have these other kinks that come up and feel taboo to them.
Mm-hmm. The various sources of information about kinky life will portray very narrow experiences of these things.
Mm-hmm.
If you are dominant in a man, this is what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
If you're submissive in a man, this is what it looks like. Likewise for dominant women, submissive women.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real. None of that is real. They're options. They are mm-hmm. not the only way to show up. And the only way to know what truly fulfills you is to sit with yourself and explore. Spending time with some kinky people at a munch. A munch is like a get together in a public place where people don't wear kinky clothes, they don't do sexual things, they're okay. just having lunch and conversation. Show up in places where you can explore in safe ways.
Okay.
And spend time with yourself finding what really meets your needs. And it's not uncommon to go through a couple of relationships to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
Don't feel the need to fit anyone's mold. And don't give in to somebody else's mold just because you're lonely. The could I be dominant because this person wants a dominant? Could I be submissive? Even though I don't really think I am, could I be because this person wants to know? Well, if you're willing to explore it, explore it.
Mm-hmm.
But don't put yourself in a role in any permanent kind of way
mm-hmm.
if you're not comfortable. One of the things that is common enough that it gets kind of a folklore status in the kink community. It's called sub-frenzy.
Have you ever heard of this? No.
So sub-frenzy is a new submissive, brand new to the world. They've been thinking about it or watching porn or reading erotica for a while, and now they're finally taking that step to try it in real life with somebody.
Hmm.
And they want to go straight into the full dynamic because it's hot.
Mm-hmm.
They downloaded a contract and they go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they are like 0 to 60 overnight, just immediately all in on some new relationship.
Okay.
Or plural relationships, depending on whether they're polyamorous, non-monogamous.
Mm-hmm.
But they are no holds barred exploring. If that's you, be safe. There's nothing wrong with it. and know that it will settle. Know that coming down and finding the right dynamic for you in a day-to-day life kind of way is healthy and a good place to go. It's not sustainable to remain in this, like, brand new energy where you are, it's the only thing you think about. It's the only priority and goal that you have. You know, you show up naked to serve your master his coffee.
Mm-hmm. It's reminding me of kind of how they say, like, once the kid who never got to go out and do anything goes off to college and now they're, like, doing everything and anything. Mm-hmm. But eventually they have to slow down. They have to start doing their work. They have to start caring about certain things to stay in school. That's kind of what it is reminding me of. Like, it's okay to have freedom, and now that you have that freedom and you want to explore what life looks like, but it has to be sustainable and it has to make sense for you.
Yeah. So be careful how committed you become to someone in those very early days. Give yourself a little bit of space. If you're in the exploring part, great, explore. But don't put yourself in a permanent situation until you've done some exploring. I guess that's my advice.
Okay.
When you're in that kind of altered state, negotiating from a place of grounded self, just, it can't happen. You're not there yet. You don't know your needs and wants. You don't, you're not going to slow down to pay attention to yourself well enough in that environment.
What would you say is the middle ground, right? When would they know that, okay, I'm done exploring, or I have enough information to start setting some real relationship boundaries and being able to kind of feel comfortable with that.
I think when you are able to identify that you are coming from a place of knowing that you like it instead of wondering if you might. Exploration is fantastic. And it's one of the beauties of the kink world that it's kind of this new frontier of things to find for yourself. And if you find that it's not working for you, if some particular dynamic, some type of play is not working for you, being able to step away from that and make conscious choices and not just follow along what somebody else is pressuring you to do because they're in a dominant space or they have some other thing to offer. That's when you're starting down that path of, I can feel confident in beginning to negotiate. I'm making this from a place of knowledge and not curiosity.
Okay, so being able to have some kind of groundedness, and I really enjoy this, and I've been enjoying this for a while, and and every time I do it, I still have the same enjoyment. I don't feel pressured to do it, and I'm not necessarily putting myself in a box to do it for someone else.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a fantastic way to put that. Yeah.
That's really helpful, and I think just being able to understand, what was the term you used? A sub-frenzy. Just being able to have that term, right? Because I think it makes a lot of sense if you're going out and exploring and this is new to you and exciting. Because kink seems really exciting depending on what your kinks are. So exploring and stepping out there would just be this new world for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense to say, okay, well, let you explore, and then when you find something that you really enjoy, you feel confident in it, you're not really doing it for other people,
mm-hmm.
then you kind of start creating some boundaries and some structure around what is best for you.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to clarify two things. We call it sub-frenzy because it shows up sometimes in submissives, but dominants do it too.
Okay.
Okay. So, and I think any new exploration, as you're saying, can do it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be very clear, I am not using that in a derogatory kind of way. It's a fun process.
Mm-hmm.
If that's where you are, enjoy it, be safe, respect your own consent, respect the consent of others, but have fun. It's a way of discovering yourself that a lot of people never experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're enjoying that process, just keep respecting consent and you're good.
Mm-hmm. I love that. As long as you are open to it and you want to do it, explore.
Mm-hmm.
Be safe with it. Make sure you're not putting yourself or others in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
And find out what it is that you really like.
Mm-hmm. Another place that this is taking me.
Mm-hmm.
Or the culture of consent.
Mm-hmm. Is consent another podcast?
Gonna mention it now. We can see
okay.
if it needs to come up around, because there's that's a huge topic.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I don't know that I need to say all the things about consent at the moment, but I think you're right that we could talk at great length.
I feel like consent is so nuanced, depending on the person and the topic, that it could be a whole nother podcast, especially in the kink community.
Mm-hmm. So, what comes up for you when we talk about consent?
So, my first initial thought for consent is to make sure that you are on the same page.
Yes.
And I know for some people, like if they are used to kind of just going with the flow of things and not necessarily checking in with their own needs, I would be the person to double check with this person, making sure that we're on the same page, being flexible. Because I feel like some people think consent is that one and done, right? You signed your signature on the contract and now we're playing this out. Whereas people are exploring. Some people don't really know themselves that well, and what worked last week may not work this week, and they consented last week. So now we're running into an issue, potentially. So when I think of consent, I think of constantly consenting and making sure that we are both agreeing to this and being able to withdraw that consent at any time.
Yes. You know, I think of kind of the process that we go through as therapists. We call it informed consent. And this is kind of how we let clients know what to expect in our offices. And most therapists have kind of a document that they sign at the beginning. North Carolina, we're required to have one. And it covers some of the things like confidentiality and fees and don't friend me on social media. But in our profession, it's really an ongoing process that if something changes, if new things develop, which in all human endeavors they do, new things develop, we need to continually be communicating about that. And it's no different in kink negotiations. Maybe that's kind of the place that this is feeling appropriate for me to have a little bit of a conversation about consent, because we're talking about it in the context of negotiation. That it's this ongoing process over time that you have to be paying attention to yourself, pay attention to your own consent. Don't just go along. And you have to have some level of comfort talking about it.
Yeah. Being transparent about whatever it is that you need. What are you consenting to?
I will also add this rule. The middle of play is not the time to renegotiate consent. Because you are not in the headspace to show up and be capable of consenting. So if, and I'm speaking more to the partner who is doing the kink, and not the person who is receiving the kink, because a lot of kinks are like that. Impact play, so forth. Don't try to renegotiate with the person in this moment. They can't respond responsibly. If they said no to maybe penetration, maybe they said no to a specific implement, maybe they said no to any number of things, that no stands until they are back in a normal headspace. There is not a space to ask, hey, how do you feel about this? Could we maybe like add this thing in? Nope. That kink messes with your brain at a very physical level. And I'm that's a technical term, right? Messes with. But it does. Like, people talk about subspace. It happens to dominance too during play, that there is just a difference in your brain that you almost feel high.
That's what I was thinking. So as you were saying, don't like revoke the consent or try to change
it. You can revoke it.
Sorry, don't.
But you can't add to it.
Yeah, don't add to it. It's like similar to being intoxicated. Right, so if someone is intoxicated and you're trying to do different things with them and you ask them, can I, is it okay if I do this? They're coming from an intoxicated place. So they may say yes, but they may then afterwards, once they sober up or once they're thinking logically, feel some type of regret or some type of remorse for doing certain things.
Or they might feel violated because... This is getting a little far ahead of ourselves, but in that space, it's largely the dominant personality or person's responsibility to monitor those boundaries, because the person on the other side is not capable of doing that.
And if they're not monitoring the boundaries and they cross the boundary, then the person would end up feeling very violated, and that would end up resulting in a lack of trust in the dynamic now.
Yep. And that's the kind of thing that shows up in our office. Yeah. Okay. 100%.
I'm glad that you added that in there, because that's really important.
All right. Any final thoughts on kink today?
I just really enjoyed this conversation. I feel like I've learned a lot. I really appreciate you for being vulnerable and sharing some of your personal story as well. That's been really helpful. And I'm really here to learn more. So I hope to be a part of this series and learn as I share some of your expertise.
And want to learn from you and see things from new eyes.
Well, I'm coming from a very fresh, new perspective. So I might be asking questions that people who are also fresh and new would want answers to. Like, give me the very baby basics. I need to learn how to walk in this scenario. So, I really enjoy this. It was really insightful and also really helpful.
Last thing. related to today's conversation. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things can people bring to us? Because I have my thoughts on that, and I'll share them after you share. Like, what do you feel like you can bring to this conversation a couple might be having?
I want to hear your thoughts first. I'm still trying to understand what you mean exactly.
So for me, I would say if you're in a negotiation or renegotiation of boundaries, consent, rules, structure, any of those things. Marie and I both work with kink at Bull City. That's healthy to bring to us. If you are trying to learn to stand in your own groundedness around, I just give in. And I feel like I don't even know how valid my consent is because I don't know if I can even say no to people. And if I can't say no, can I say yes? I think that's a great thing to bring to us. I'll let you know if I think of any others.
Okay. I'll add to that.
Sure.
So I would say for me, I would really enjoy working with people who have some type of attachment issues. And they're also wanting to explore kink and what that looks like in a from an attachment lens. So if they're anxious or if they're avoidant, but they still want to explore kinks, they also need to figure out what is safe and secure for them.
Yes. And I love that.
I feel like that gets overlooked sometimes. They just kind of hop into the community and now they're acting out of a place that's insecure.
That's a beautiful way to put that. I think you're right that doing some attachment work around if you're exploring, if you are noticing patterns in the way that you're engaging in the community or in play or with partners, and you're uncomfortable with those patterns, attachment work would be a really good thing to bring.
Yeah. Because I've seen it in my individual work of it kind of being I want to be polyamorous. I want to be, you know, I want to explore the kinky community, but I'm anxious. And I don't know how to share what I really need or what I really want. And it's like, well, let's separate the two, right? You can explore and that's okay. But also knowing that you're anxious, knowing that you are questioning their motives and questioning if they'll love you after exploring this kink, that's also over here. So we have to figure that part out. So I like the attachment work because we can separate the two. You can be kinky and explore and also come from a secure place, which is what we'll have to really work on.
There are strategies that some trauma-informed and attachment-informed dominants use, maybe this is another podcast, to support a partner who wants to come from a place of security, who might not already be there, but want the skill, like want to create an environment to help them do that. That might be an interesting podcast.
Well, I truly believe that some of the kink and power dynamics is also healing.
It can be.
Right, so
depending on how it's done, it sure can be. It has been for me.
So, because relationships in itself can be healing. So if you're adding kinks on top of that, right, you're adding something that you truly enjoy, something that brings you pleasure and excitement and makes you feel even more secure and intimate, then it can additionally be more healing for you. But it has to be done in the right way.
Well, we'll keep exploring. We'll see how long this series gets. Might be really interesting. Well, thanks for joining me today, Marie.
Thanks for having
me. And maybe next week we'll get another one out.
I hope so. I hope people enjoy this and we can keep going.
Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us today at Sex and the Bull City. Thanks. Bye-bye.